Before we start this episode, we have a quick message from our sponsors.
If you're studying for the Foreign Service Officer test like us, we have a great study tool for you.
Besides listening to our podcast, we also use FSO Compass.
On FSO Compass, you can find practice tests for every section, comprehensive courses that guide you through the entire application process, and you can even connect with other aspiring U.S. diplomats.
The resources have really helped us prepare, and we hope they help you too. To access FSO Compass and get 10% off your annual subscription, be sure to use the link in our description box.
Good luck! Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of How Did We Not Know That? I'm Nat.
I'm Jack.
And today I have no idea what Jack's episode is going to be about. It's a complete surprise. So, Jack, what are you going to be talking about today?
Well, originally I had an episode idea planned, but then late into the night I woke up from a dream and I suddenly felt the need to cover this topic. It came to me. Oh. In a moment of inspiration, a glimmer of inspiration.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So, now I'm going to ask you, how obsessed with the royal family is your family?
My family, they probably could not care less. Actually take that back. My older sister is really interested in the royal family, but like my mom and my dad, I don't know that much about the royal family, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm the same as you. I could care less. But I was in New York walking with my friend and they have a new play on Broadway called Diana. It's about Princess Diana. And my friend and I got to talking and she asked, what is with middle-aged women and their obsession with the royal family? And I completely relate because my mom is really, really into the royal family. I swear, I feel like every time I look over at her computer screen, she's reading news about the royal family, which, granted, my friend's mom and my mom were from countries that did have the royal family.
I was just about to say, but still.
Yeah, I feel like people are just really into the concept of kings and queens, maybe, you know?
Mm. Are we talking about Princess Diana today?
No, we are talking about the entire British monarchy. Specifically, how the British monarchy lost power and became the constitutional monarchy that we know of today. Also, I'm excited to do this because when I was doing the research, I realized English history is really documented throughout all of time, and it makes you realize how small we are. We're really just a little speck of dust on the timeline.
Oh, we really are.
And, like, dinosaurs were around even longer, so we're just so insignificant. But anyways, so our question for this episode, which Nat will answer at the end, or will reveal at the end, is how many monarchies still exist today?
Oh, wait, that's such a good question, Jack. What the heck?
Well, do you have a guess?
Let's see, what monarchies can I name? There's still the British monarchy. Mm-hmm. I know Thailand has, Thailand is a monarchy. Okay, I'm gonna guess that there's 25.
Ooh.
25. That's my guess. I'm trying to think. I just watched the opening ceremony of the Olympics, so I'm trying to think which ones have, like, the word, like, kingdom or, like, anything that, like, but that's my guess. 25.
An excellent guess, and we will talk about if that's correct at the end. So here we go. First things first, what is a monarchy? Nat, do you want to tell everyone what a monarchy is?
A monarchy, isn't it just, like, a nation that's ruled by a king and a queen? Like, there's a set royal family, and then, like, usually the king or queen dies, it's like the power is passed on to their children.
Yes, that's exactly it. So, how did monarchies get started? So the earliest monarchies that we know about are the ones in Sumer, an ancient civilization in Mesopotamia, and Egypt, so around 3000 BC. And for this episode, as much as I would like to talk about every single monarchy, we don't have enough time in the world, so we are going to focus on the British monarchy. And the British monarchy goes back to the triple-digit medieval AD time period when there were many very small kingdoms across all of the lands of what we know today as the United Kingdom. And they have this documented so well that they even know about a king that they had in 966 AD called Ethelred the Unready. Who was very much unprepared.
What does that even mean? Is history for being unready? Like, how?
Well, he was not ready because he was named king at the age of 12. Oh, in 966 AD. This is way before there's a parliament established, so it's really just this 12-year-old kid.
That's so mean to bully a kid like that. I'd be like, this kid is 12. Oh, he's the unready one.
Maybe they didn't say it to his face.
He's a child.
Anyways, I thought he was kind of interesting. So the monarchy situation for a long time was also very messy because it used to be that you would just fight and overthrow your siblings to get the crown. There's no rule that it has to go to the first son. That's like a fairly new rule. So before, it was any sibling whose parent was the king, you could fight with your siblings for that crown. You'd go to war with your own family. Not only did the siblings do this, but even the wives of kings could also murder each other to get the crown, you know, full control.
Oh, dang.
So, yeah, the winner is usually whoever has the largest military. It's called military diplomacy.
Nice.
Right, so lots of civil wars. And we're going to try to make the history of kings and queens as brief as possible. And I'm going to go through the events that led to the royal family losing power. So in 1215, which we've literally gone from like the triple digits all the way to 1215, King John is forced to sign the Magna Carta. So do you remember what the Magna Carta was?
I, like, literally should know this. Isn't that just like saying that nations have like sovereignty or whatever? Wait, why do I not know the Magna Carta? Like, I should know this.
No. It's a good guess. The Magna Carta means the Great Charter, and that established the principle that everyone is subject to the law, even the king, and guarantees the right of individuals. So now individuals have the right to justice and the right to a fair trial.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is significant because this is the first time that now the king is losing a bit of power. You're not just this huge dictator tyrant that the laws don't apply to. Now you also have to follow the law. So that's the first chip away of the king's absolute power. Keynote, then this also created the first English parliament. So after signing the Magna Carta, this gave barons, which are wealthy landowners, the right to serve as consultants to the king on governmental matters. So now there are some checks that get placed on the monarchy and they lose some power. So then moving forward, at some point, the lineage of who is supposed to rule gets so messy that from 1455 to 1487, it's a 33-year time span, there were back-and-forth civil wars as these two great-grandchildren tried to fight over the throne. So then by 1509, Henry VIII becomes king and tries to make the transition of power a little more clean, a little more structured with some clear rules. So Henry VIII is the one that creates the male primogeniture rule, and the eldest son gets the crown. If there are no sons, then the eldest daughter can get the crown. Parliament then approves these new rules. And also Henry VIII, do you remember the other thing he's known for?
Is he the one that like kills all his wives?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. I didn't see that.
Well, he does he kill them or like all his wives die? Like he has like 10 wives or something. Oh, wasn't he? He legalized divorce because he wanted to marry. Or no, it was something about like his wife was not Catholic or something. You tell me.
He splits from the Catholic Church.
That's what it is. Because his wife, it was like the girl from Spain, the woman from Spain, and he wants to marry her, but she's not Catholic, right?
I don't think that's it. I think that his wife wasn't giving birth to sons, so he wanted a divorce, and then he had to split. Let me double check this right now. Because, he did kill his wives.
Yeah, okay. In high school, I went to England in London. Like, we went to a museum, and we went to the Tower of London, and that's, like, where his wives were kept. And like,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, I'm trying to refresh my memory.
Yeah, you went to London in high school?
It was, like, the Lizzie McGuire movie. It was, like, with my high school choir.
Wow.
We, like, going to Europe with all your classmates. It was interesting.
You met a Paolo.
Yeah, Paolo.
And then you were a pop star in London for a day.
What's the song she sees?
Hey Now.
Hey Now. Yeah, there you go. That's what I did in the Tower of London.
All right, well, yeah, so you are right, he did kill his wives, and yes, he did want to get his marriage annulled, so technically not a divorce. Mm. An annulment is just you say you never were married in the first place, and he did that because we weren't even married. Yeah, he wanted that because he was really anxious about getting a male heir, which, you know, maybe tweak that primogeniture rule that you made then if you're nervous about it.
Yeah, wait a second. Yeah, that was the reason why I killed his wife. But it's the male genetics that determines the gender of the baby. You know, it's the chromosome that the male passes, and then so it was his fault.
Right, so it was on
you, buddy.
I guess they didn't understand that in the 1500s. Genetics were not super well studied at that point. So the primogeniture rule almost immediately causes a lot of problems. King Henry VIII ends up dying at age 44, and his eldest son, Edward, is then made king at the age of 9 years old.
Yeah, okay, I knew this. And isn't he, like, sick, too, or something?
Probably. I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of... Like, the royal family, most of it is a lot of inbreeding, so I think that's why
you don't have to whisper, I think we all know. Not a secret. King Henry VIII's son is actually the third eldest child, with two elder sisters ahead of him. And he does the job of being king with the help of Parliament, obviously, until he's about 15 years old, and then he decides he doesn't want to be king. But he also doesn't want to give the crown to his older sisters. So instead, he gives it to his cousin, whose name is Lady Jane Grey, when she was only 16 years old. She was just 1 year older than him. And
wait, how can he do that?
Well, he's the king.
How can he just pass it to the cousin?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's the thing. So Lady Jane Grey's title is then disputed for about 9 days before she ends up getting beheaded by Mary the First of England, who was the elder sister.
Oh my gosh.
So now Queen Mary the First is queen. And she rules for a while, but she never has any sons. Actually, she has no children at all. So then she passes the crown down to her little sister, whose name is Elizabeth, but Queen Elizabeth also doesn't have any children. So then, the only person left that they could give it to was Lady Jane Grey, but because they killed her, they didn't have an heir now, so there's no clear successor in England. Then this is when they need to work with the Kingdom of Scotland, because they actually do have some blood relations with them, and there's a big event between Queen Elizabeth of England and Mary, Queen of Scots, because they made a whole movie on this. I don't know.
I didn't see it, but I remember when it came.
Yeah, so I think there is a lot that happened, but we're not going to talk about that today.
We have the whole monarchy to talk about.
At some point then, with Mary, Queen of Scots, and Queen Elizabeth of England, they come to some arrangement, and now Scotland and England are going to be under the same kingdom. So that's all we need to know for this episode. So that was just like, that's how they're starting to form. And then we go forward a little bit, and there's a king around this time later on, who is King Charles I, and he didn't get along with British Parliament at all. He was way too autocratic. So then an English general statesman led Parliament to wage war against the king, and his name was Oliver Cromwell. So Oliver Cromwell just doesn't think that monarchies are useful, and he doesn't really like the concept of kings and queens. So especially paired with King Charles being very absolute in his ruling style, they fight with him. So in 1642, there's a civil war, and he actually gets King Charles executed, and then Cromwell, so they end up killing that king, and Oliver Cromwell then establishes himself as Lord Protector of England. So he's not a king, technically, and then for a brief period, England is now a republic, it's not a kingdom, because there's no king.
Okay.
So this is important because this marks an end to the absolute power of monarchs that had been very present in the past, and the monarchy is now a gift from Parliament not ordained from God, because
wow,
if Parliament doesn't like you, they'll get rid of you.
That's a huge shift.
Right. However, Cromwell, even though he's Lord Protector, not a king, he still acts a lot like a king. Mm. So when he dies, actually King Charles II, who was the next heir to the throne, resumes power again.
Okay.
He really learned from the lessons of his dad getting murdered that he needs to work with Parliament.
Yeah.
It's around 1649, and this is when England becomes a constitutional monarchy. So now the Parliament has the power to check the king, and vice versa. So every bill that goes through Parliament needs royal assent, technically, but it's just a formality. Another big change was known as the Glorious Revolution of 1688, when Parliament actually again disposed of the king, because the king at the time wanted to convert to Catholicism. And everyone is Protestant now, they're under the Church of England. So Parliament did not want to go back to Catholicism. So what they did is they invited his daughter Mary, who was Protestant, and her husband William, who was at the time Prince of Orange, probably not called Orange, Prince of Orange maybe, in the Netherlands, to invade the empire and assume the throne jointly. So they helped invade their own country to establish this new monarchy.
That's so wild.
Right? So it's really...
So it's just so different. It's so different, like, than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. However, okay, in exchange for Parliament offering them the throne of England, they made William, who was Prince of Orange in the Netherlands, and he's now going to be the king, they made him sign a document called the English Bill of Rights. And this resulted in a huge step in limiting the power of the monarchy and preserving the rights of Englishmen, so much so that parts of this document are actually in the United States Bill of Rights.
Oh, interesting. I did. Parliament really has the most power now. Because they can just, if they don't like what you're doing, they can just switch you out with another person.
Yeah. We're going to fast forward a little bit to the early 1700s, and we run out of an heir again. So then Parliament has to do something really quickly, or else every single person that has even a little bit of royal blood would be eligible to fight over the crown.
Oh.
So they reset the whole thing, and they pick Sophia Hanover to start the lineage. However, she unfortunately dies 2 months before becoming queen, but her son, George I, then takes over. So then we get a few lines of Georges. We have George I, George II, and then we get to George III. So Nat, what do you remember about George III?
I know the name, George III. He's just a really bad leader, right? Like, it's me. Really, like, authoritarian?
Not exactly, but no. I'll give you a hint. So he's significant for Americans, and he became king in 1760.
Oh, okay. So that's right. Okay, so he's king when we're fighting for independence.
Exactly. King George
III. That's why I know that name so well.
Yeah, he was in Hamilton.
Yeah, okay. See, now, okay, that's sad that that's how I know.
So King George III is known in the books as the king that lost America and his mind.
Oh.
It is believed that he had a genetic blood disorder known as porphyria, which is horrible. It causes insomnia, anxiety, abdominal pain, blue urine, as well as extremely violent seizures.
Oh my.
And then he later also developed dementia and became completely blind and increasingly deaf.
Oh my God, that's awful. How can you?
Be a good ruler at that point? Yeah. Exactly. That's what a lot of people are thinking. And an important change that happened during his rule, though, is that he gave up direct rule of the nation to Parliament itself and permitted the Prime Minister to make policy on his own.
Oh, so that's an even bigger shift. So now the Prime Minister can make...
Right, because he's not well enough to rule, so he gives up a lot of power to let Parliament handle the actual ruling of the country.
Mm.
This is also the period when Enlightenment is taking off. So a lot of people are starting to become more skeptical of whether a monarchy is the best way to govern.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So then we fast forward again to 1837, and we're going to get Queen Victoria, who ruled until 1901. And she's interesting because somehow her grandsons become Tsar of Russia, and then she had another grandson become King of England, which is strange to me that that happened because they're coming from the same grandmother. So how is one representing all of Russia? At most, he would be maybe half Russian. It's such a small circle. So it makes you wonder like who is representing.
No, it's like such a small like dating pool, you know? The royal families are all mixed with each other.
Right. It makes you think about because they're really obsessed with this pure blood ordained from God. But how could you be ordained from God to rule a country that you're not even from?
Yeah, that's very true. That's a good argument.
So anyways, okay, now we're gonna play a game. We're gonna try something different. So this game that I came up with is called Whose Crown Is It Anyway?
Oh my gosh!
So in the 1900s, there were more than 20 monarchies in all of Europe. And today, there are only 12 monarchies left. So, Nat, I'm going to tell you about the story of the downfall of 4 of them, and then I want you to guess which monarchy it was.
Okay. Do I have answer options, or I've just got to think of
No, which... you just got to think about it.
Okay.
The first one I'm going to talk about was established in 1871, and this empire was the leading industrial power in Europe at the time. The king was also the grandson of Queen Victoria. However, this country was one of the biggest allies to Austrians in World War I. The king ends up abdicating in 1918 after the side they are on in World War I loses the war, and then he fled to exile in the Netherlands, where he died in 1941.
Is it Russia?
No.
No! Was it Hungary?
Okay, okay. Well, so Hungary at this time is... Hungary at this time is still
is in not, one empire. Is not... Yeah, what is the empire name?
I'll give you a hint. Some say that this kingdom actually started World War I.
Oh! Is it not Austria-Hungary?
No, so it's not them. This is a hard one, actually. I wasn't sure if we were going to get this one. Maybe I should have started with the... But their king's name is... Kaiser Wilhelm.
Oh, yeah, it's Germany, but what is their, like, what was their, like, kingdom name, though?
The German Empire, that's it.
Oh, just German Empire?
Yeah.
Why was I overthinking it so much?
I mean, I didn't realize Germany had a monarchy, even for a small amount of time. You should for sure get this one. So, this empire was brutally murdered, and they existed from 1721 to 1917. The kingdom also stretched over 3 continents, and it was an absolute monarchy. But then, a revolution in 1905 made it a constitutional one before the ruler ends up abdicating in 1917.
Is this Russia?
Yeah, this one's Russia.
Yay, okay, okay. For you. Yeah, I literally did an episode on this, so I was like, if I'm not getting it right, you should listen to our episode. Did Rasputin have magical powers?
Yes, then you can hear more about it. So you can
learn about...
It's my top favorite episode. I loved it so much. All right, so this kingdom, the next kingdom, kingdom number 3, only had a total of 4 kings. And...
Oh.
One of their last kings was trying so hard to stop socialism that they supported a prime minister who later ended up becoming a dictator, leading them into World War II. Then, when they lose World War II, the king abdicates in an attempt to clean the monarchy's image, and then a new king is crowned in May of 1946, but then a month later, the monarchy is completely abolished through a constitutional referendum.
Is this Spain?
No.
Is it close? Am I
Yeah, close it's fairly close. No? It's close geographically.
Who had a monarchy in World War II? It's like dictators in World War II.
Right, that's a good place to start.
Germany was already...
It's not Germany.
Italy?
Yeah, it's the Kingdom of Italy.
Bing, bing, bing. Okay. I did not know Italy had a kingdom. Am I stupid?
It was very short. It wasn't that long. Empire number 4. This empire lasted for 6 centuries and was the core of interactions between the East and the West. They controlled most of the Byzantine Empire. But then they started to lose their territories in the 18th and 19th centuries. And in their ambitions to recover their lost territories, they got involved in World War I. But they were also on the losing side. Their king eventually gets exiled to Malta, before passing away in San Remo, Italy in 1926. Which, the places that these kings go for exile are really nice.
Yeah, what the heck. It is, dun dun dun, the Ottoman Empire.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would not, I honestly probably would not have guessed it.
If I didn't say
it. If it wasn't for that little, but that's okay. I'm glad because I forget about the Ottoman Empire, even though it was literally 6 centuries.
Incredibly long.
Six centuries.
Whose crown is it anyways? Thanks for playing.
Wow, that was a fun game. I'm so glad. I'm so lucky to have played it. I don't think I did a very good job. The first question, I think it took me like 10 guesses.
No, that was a hard one.
Such an easy answer. But this is a fun game. Thank you for making
Of course. Wow. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope our listeners enjoyed it. Yeah, you did a lot better than I would have done. So, as we can see from the game we just played, a lot of the monarchies on the losing side ended around World War I era. But from our history lesson, the British monarchy had actually also been losing power over the span of the last 800 years. And eventually, in 1936, after World War I, we get into more recent times, Edward VIII becomes king. But he ends up abdicating a year later because he wanted to marry Wallis Simpson, who was a commoner, but also an American who had been divorced 2 times. Did you hear about this?
Oh, no. How have I never heard about this? That's so spicy. That's a scandal.
It was a scandal.
Like, for the time, you know? Of course, support it. But, like, at the time, that's risky.
It really was, because the divorces were a big problem, because it affected the royal image. So the Church of England condemned his decision to marry her, so he abdicates, and then he gives the throne to his younger brother, George VI, but George VI was already really reluctant to become king. He didn't want the throne. And during his rule, he ended up having to oversee World War II and the subsequent breakup of the English Empire, which is a lot.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's not a fun job to
Right. Take Especially on. When you weren't sure if you wanted the job in the first place. So, yeah, to be honest, during this time, the king and the queen, they really just take on a role of encouraging the English public during the war. They attempted to raise morale, and they served as a symbol of hope for the people. But over in Parliament, there is a prime minister at the time called Winston Churchill.
Dun, dun, dun. Is King George, is he the one from the King's Speech? Like the movie?
Oh, maybe.
That's how I'm like, which king was that?
That is right, he did have a stutter.
Ah.
Huh, there you go. So yeah, he had a lot to deal with. Anyways, Winston Churchill, for anyone who doesn't know, he was a man who joined Parliament at the age of 25 in 1900. And then he became prime minister from 1940 to 1945, and again in 1951 and 1955. So whether or not you like Winston Churchill, he is credited for successfully leading Britain through World War II. Many people consider him as the greatest Briton of all time. So Parliament really outshines the monarchy in terms of defending the country and serving when it comes to serious matters. In addition to that, the past few years were still very stressful on King George VI, so he ends up dying at age 56, and then his daughter, Elizabeth II, takes the crown in 1952 at the age of 25, and Queen Elizabeth II is our current queen. She is still the Queen of England today, and she has been the longest reigning monarch of England.
Oh, is she? I didn't know that fact.
Yeah, she became that in 2015.
Wow.
She's had a very long life, so.
Yeah, she's what, like 98?
Yeah, she's in her 90s now.
Wow, so all the way from the BCs to today. Today, the royal family really doesn't have that much power in British politics, correct? Like, it's more just of a symbolism.
You are correct. I mean, that brings me to my next point. So, like, present day, what does the British monarchy do? Like, what are they doing now that they don't have power as they used to? The British monarchy today is a more symbolic role. They're supposed to make visits around the world and host heads of state. And the rest of the royal family is supposed to support the king and queen in those efforts. For instance, they go to charity events. They go to charity events. Everything else is slipping so my funny. Mind as to what they do.
Yeah. There's ceremonies.
Yeah, ribbon cutting ceremonies.
They travel to other Commonwealth countries.
Yeah.
Right? They oversee.
Right, they drive through crowds.
Projects.
Yeah. And, they always have to be a model representation of the royal family. So they have to maintain a specific image. And most of the time, they're just morale boosters, and they represent England's connections to their history and tradition.
Mm.
So, in terms of power, though, they only serve as the head of state, but they actually have no ability to pass legislation. All of the making and passing legislation is with the elected parliament.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. So then, like, the pros and cons of keeping a monarchy. The pro is that a lot of people in England really do love the monarchy, and I get it now. Before, I was a little skeptical.
Mm.
I was like, I don't really see a point in having a king and queen, but it is more of a connection to their past.
It's your history.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a cultural thing, like your history and, yeah, especially pop culture, you know, like, it's like very much like they're celebrities now, so people are very much invested in their lives and relations, so if they were to one day just be like, oh, never mind, like, I think people would really miss that aspect of it.
Right. Honestly, the Queen Elizabeth right now, she's really, really loved. She has a 72% approval rating.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the royals bring in a lot of money for the UK economy.
Ooh.
It's estimated that they bring in about £1.8 billion every year.
What? Just through, like, tourism and, like...
Exactly. Yeah, half of it alone comes just from tourism.
What?
And then the rest comes from increases in trade that they get if the queen visits a country, so it has a diplomatic effect as well.
Wow.
And also fashion influence from Kate Middleton. I didn't even think about that, but apparently it's a lucrative area.
Yeah.
Those are the pros, but then the con is that the royal family isn't cheap. They actually cost taxpayers around £67 million to maintain a year. But they're adding $1 billion onto the economy, so it's a good investment.
Yeah, so I guess they're still bringing in a profit, but yeah.
Right, and of course, they do get special privileges just for being born in the right place in the right time. Like, they don't legally have to pay taxes. And I think the queen does pay taxes, actually, but they are not legally obliged to pay taxes.
Oh, but she, like, still does it? That's cool.
Yeah, she still... Well, that's why they like her.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, right? So, although people really like Queen Elizabeth, they don't really like her son, Prince Charles, who is next in line for the throne. Mm. So when the queen dies, who really knows how keen the public is going to be on the monarch?
I wonder if anything will change. Like, I feel like now it's being talked about more, like, what is the royal family? Why is there a royal family? Are they functioning the way we wanted to? Like, will there be changes made? While you're talking, I'm thinking of, like, other places that have a monarchy today. Japan has one. I live right by the Imperial Palace. Like, I was a 20-minute walk away. Like, I don't know why that didn't click. I think Spain still has a monarchy. I don't know. I forgot about, like, other European countries. Does Greece, you mentioned Greece earlier, has
okay, here's family. The thing. So Greece doesn't have a monarchy. The monarchy dissolved in 1971, but if you look up royals today...
Oh, like the descendants.
Yeah, they act like these... This one family is, like, the Prince of Greece, and they're still treated as, like, the Prince of Greece and the royal family of Greece, but they don't have a monarchy anymore.
Yeah, they're just, like, the descendant. That's interesting.
But they still get that.
Like, that special
that
treatment.
Image and that privilege. Mm. Yeah.
So how many monarchies exist today? Was I close?
There are 44 in the world today. So 13 of them are in Asia, 12 are in Europe, 10 are in North America, 6 are in Oceania, and 3 are in Africa. And there are no monarchies in South America.
Wait, 10 are in North America? Where?
Caribbean.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I know. When I saw that too, I was like,
come again?
Who?
And South America has none. That's interesting. Wow. Wait, which continent has the most?
Asia.
Asia. Japan, Thailand.
Yeah. Cambodia.
Cambodia, okay.
Yeah, Malaysia is also under a monarchy.
Are they?
But constitutional.
They're not tied to, they have their own monarchy?
Yeah, they actually have their own monarchy. Not tied to the English. Because I went to the Royal Palace. It was so cool. I didn't go inside. But you can just visit the Royal Palace in Malaysia.
That's so cool. That's so interesting.
Yeah, lots of kingdoms. But yes, that's how the British crown lost their power.
Wow. Thank you, Jack, so much for this. This was a fun episode. We played a game. We learned about scandals and intrigue. So thank you so much. I hope everyone learned a lot. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you next week. Bye. Bye. This has been an episode of How Did We Not Know That?
If you liked it, don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
You can also follow us on all social media at HDWNKT and subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Also, check out our website at HDWNKT.com to find all of our show notes and study guides for each episode.
You can help us improve the quality of the podcast by becoming a history hero through our Patreon.
Thank you for listening and see you guys next week.